Okay, great. As I was collecting the material, so the main point will be there under today's agenda, I guess that's 2Y33. Instead of preparing slides, I thought I'd just put up these notes here and we could discuss them. As I was preparing the materials, I kind of realized we had kind of, I think we had resolved a few issues here, so that's why I called it Claim 1. Looking back at the notes, et cetera, I think we decided that as far as specifying properties of ontologies, you know, for example, things like for provenance and other sort of features of ontologies, that we had pretty well, I think, agreed that OMV was going to be sufficient for that. So in terms of ontology task, the different knowledge representation paradigm, provenance information, like I said, for a person, ontology language, ontology syntax, ontology type, formality level, these are all properties within OMV. And as far as there are use cases we're concerned that we have developed and specified so far, it's looking like OMV is sufficient. However, my second claim here, and that's probably the main thing we want to discuss today, is that OMV will not be sufficient for specifying the relationships between ontologies within an ontology repository such as we are building within OOR. So just as a bit of kind of summary, the next bullet, 2Y5S, I put down the four relations between ontologies, and I'm using the OMV document, OMV Ontology Metadata Vocabulary for the Semantic Web. I think it's version 2.4, dated January 2008. And on page 15 of that document, they have a overview class diagram, and that's where I'm getting these four relations from. So there's use imports, has prior version, is incompatible with, and is backwards compatible. Now, the last three of those relations are focusing on different versions of an ontology, right? So a particular ontology has a prior version. The current version may be incompatible with some earlier version or may be backwards compatible with an earlier version. So those relations, again, are primarily between different versions of the same ontology. And, again, looking back at the notes that we've had over the past few metadata workshops, one of the things, in addition to that, I mean, we're not going to throw those away, but in addition to that, we often want to focus on relationships between completely different ontologies. And so I think it was Tim that had also kind of, you know, alerted us to the fact that, well, there is this, you know, use imports relation, because one of the, some of the examples we had talked about within the past few meetings has been things like, you know, the time ontology or geographic ontologies. And so there'd be this ability to import other ontologies. You know, so we wanted to be able to combine multiple ontologies together, for example. And so the idea would be to use the use imports relation. But one of the things that's interesting is that it's not clear within OMV, but it's something that definitely we would want to be able to do, would be, well, what happens if ontologies are axiomatized in different languages, right? So since we have an open ontology repository, and we've talked, you know, about, you know, how Calore, the common logic ontology repository, would be related to the different ontologies we have within OOR, is that we often will have ontologies that are axiomatized in different languages. Just even say in the time case, we could have OWL time where there's some OWL axioms. You could have a few of those extend that with rules interchange format with some additional axioms, and might be some that you need common logic to express. And so, you know, I think this would be a very common sort of thing. We haven't had to identify that explicitly as a use case, but it would be pretty common to be able to say, well, I want to be able to use, you know, import this other ontology that may be in a different language than the one I'm working on. So it's not clear whether used imports would allow that. And I guess what we're, you know, kind of getting at here would be, well, you know, this idea of what people might call a, you know, heterogeneous ontologies, ontologies that import other ontologies which are axiomatized in a different language. So that's one thing we can maybe discuss today. Another point for discussion would be, I focus on a lot of the logical relationships between ontologies. I've kind of mentioned focus on that in previous sessions, and it's kind of one of the things that Calore's focused on. But what are the other kind of relationships between ontologies that we would need from the perspective of software functionality of the repository? So not the logical relationships, but the relationships needed to have the repository work as considered as a software artifact. And then finally, the final question for discussion today would be, what notion of modularity do we actually use within OR? So if this used imports relation is kind of focusing on kind of how a particular ontology, you know, using the imports, with used imports relations, you can kind of decompose one ontology into smaller pieces, or build up, you know, an ontology from the smaller pieces. So each language, you know, OWL and Common Logic has some notion of modularity. But do we, within OR, do we have additional constraints, if you will, on what we want to see within a module? So in a sense, what constitutes an ontology within OR? Is it a, you know, a particular module, or is it some set of modules? And how do we define that kind of collecting relationship? Is it this use imports in OMV, or is it something that's a bit broader than that, because we're potentially dealing with ontologies written in different languages? So I just want to kind of use that as the starting point for the discussions today. Like I said, looking at the different use cases, that we have, I believe, and this could be, you know, maybe some initial discussion if my claim number one is incorrect, but it seemed that the current OMV was sufficient for the OOR use cases we have so far, because they were primarily looking at the OOR from a software perspective, and so that's kind of my second to last bullet point there. So I'm just going to, I think we just open up to everyone's discussion and see where we go.
Hey, Michael?
Yes.
Todd Schneider. Oh, I'm sorry. My chat boards didn't update quickly enough. I asked the same question, unfortunately, more than once. You mentioned this notion of a module. I came in late, so if you've already defined that, I'll look to your slides. But if you haven't, what's a module?
Okay, so I have not defined a module, but implicit within, say, this use imports relation, right, is that you are importing some other ontology into yours. So there's this notion of composition of ontologies or decomposition of ontologies, whichever direction you're going.
Right.
And so we need to be able to have this ability to have this decomposition relationship. And so a module would be the
container.
You see, the most primitive piece of axioms, if you will.
Well, hold on. Is the module a part of the OOR infrastructure, or is it an artifact of the composition of modules, of ontologies?
Well, that's something we can discuss, right? I think that's something that we want to focus on, really, within the metadata, because, is it something that's implicitly defined with respect to some kind of imports or composition relation, or is it something that's kind of like a separate sort of entity? There are people who work on, you know, ontology modularization, and there's, you know, some notion of an atomic module in this kind of work. Is that something that we want to adopt? But at the very minimum, I think we do want to have, again, this composition-decomposition relationship.
Unfortunately, I think you're correct. That just, you know, entails a bunch of extra work. But I think you're right. It could be really functional at some point. You have to have this notion, this capability.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's going to have part of the metadata, i.e. whether it has one or whether it is one or not. This gets down to a definition of what we mean by module and the notion or relationship position, and then there has to be the infrastructure to support it. But maybe if we're clever, we can push enough of the responsibility onto the metadata so that the infrastructure just has to look at the metadata and know what to do. Ha ha ha, somehow.
Right.
So, Ken, this gets to the workflow issue. Can the workflow be sufficiently clever to look at the metadata and say, aha, this thingy, if we call it a module, is a composition of one or more ontologies. And in order to either present that information to a user who's searching or in order to assist it in terms of the instance of the OOR, it has to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Yeah, I presume we could do that.
Now, I say the interesting thing is that, you know, different each of the ontology languages that people use has, you know, takes some stance towards this, right? I mean, OWL imports, CL imports and Common Logic. So, I mean, these different languages have such a capability. But I think within OOR, we have to be, you know, language agnostic in a way.
Yes.
Or do people agree with that?
Oh, no, we have to, because each of the different languages has their own, say, inference engine, if nothing else, syntax that needs to be checked. And we don't want to have a monolithic structure trying to address all of those things.
Right.
So back to the notion of the – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Back to the notion of a module, in your thinking, the notion of composition – is the composition something that is inherently part of an ontology, or is it a larger construct?
Well, I think you need the ability to be able to name a particular ontology, and if that ontology contains different kinds of imports, sort of relationships, right? Then that's one way of doing the composition and decomposition.
Well, I guess I was thinking of, suppose I have a certain domain, a computer. I think of computer hardware. There's all sorts of pieces floating around in just a simple laptop, and if you get down to different levels of detail, you have a separate ontology, say, for the video card, one for the persistent storage, whether it's spin or solid state, you know, display, the LED. So you can go all over the place, possibly. And, of course, if you were searching on an ontology for domain, I want to become a laptop manufacturer, and I need to have some ontology that represents the laptop, is that the sort of notion of a module that you're thinking of? So that if I query on, ontology for laptops, I'm going to get back all of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I think of you know, modules and modularization kind of implicitly from the perspective of there will be some set of theories that are kind of the building blocks, and that then you build your other ontologies by composition, you know, combining different ontologies together, and effectively in a particular file, if you will, you do that by imports, some kind of imports relation.
Okay, now when you talk about the theory, you're talking about additional axioms, or if you do an OWL stuff, rules.
Yeah.
But then necessarily, don't you have to have the ontologies to which the various terms in the rules apply as part of that composition as a single entity? Or some way?
What do you mean? Like giving that set of axioms a name?
Well, that and also the axioms themselves have terms in, and the terms are in particular ontologies, maybe not the same ontology. Is that correct, or is that a possibility, or is that absolutely absurd?
Well, I guess that's a possibility, right? I mean, like you're not talking about like namespacing issues, right? Or
No. I'm thinking
no,
specifically
but the terms
axioms.
You have, right? You all the terms kind of will implicitly be carrying around with them all the axioms that are needed, and so you need some way of referring to the axioms, in the context of which you're interpreting a particular term.
But what if I have an axiom that goes across two different ontologies? So, for instance, go back to the laptop situation. The laptop has a display. You know, a display is something in a different ontology than, say, the laptop itself.
Right. Right. So then what you're doing is you'd have to be, you I mean, the way that we were, you know, say do it in common logic, the way you do it in OWL is you just import each ontology, and then add, you know, you can then write axioms that kind of combine terms from each of those smaller ontologies.
Right. So again, even though you're importing them, I mean, in terms of the imports and ontologies, currently the way it's thought of, at least in my mind, is that it's just like any other compile statement. I have to import these header files, or I have to import these other libraries or something, otherwise my compile won't work or my program won't run.
That's right.
From a versioning perspective, I may be using a particular version of an ontology, and I have a relationship between these ontologies as by axioms, rules, whatever. If I use a different version, something might break.
Let's see. I guess that would, you know, you can use the existing OMV relations for versioning in that sense, right? Because you have the ability to talk about whether a particular version of an ontology is compatible or not incompatible with the current ontology.
Right.
I'm talking about more than just versions here.
Oh, yeah. But now, in terms of metadata and this notion of composition and also module, how do these work together to support this sort of scenario I just suggested?
No, that's a great use case. You have a particular set of ontologies that you could actually make this a very concrete example with.
Well, actually, I do, but I can't talk about them.
Okay.
Sorry. But again, you think of any manufacturing process. There's the things you're manufacturing. There's the machinery that's used to manufacture it. You can go down the chain of entailments, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you don't need all of those entailments, but you maybe need a subset of them to do what you need to do, say, just to automate the process intelligently. You need to know about the particular machinery that involved. You may need to know the repair histories. You may need to know something about what the thing is doing, you know, whether it's stamping out integrated circuit parts or whether it's making cookies or candy or something. I don't know.
Right. But see, so I think, you know, what's special about what we're looking at is, see, if all of those ontologies are written in the same language, then you can simply use whatever, imports relation that particular language has, right? So if you're using Common Logic, you can use CL imports, and it'll handle all that, and the same thing with OWL imports. It seems to me what the challenge that we face is when, you know, we are combining ontologies from different languages. I think that's kind of the unique challenge that OOR faces, right?
I don't think we were trying to address that one just yet. The more immediate concern would be this notion of composition and how it can be supported.
No, but composition of ontologies written in different languages.
Well,
if it's written in the same language.
Well, even if it's written in the same language, that's obviously the simpler case. I don't want to get the hardy case, multiple languages. I'd like to defer that to, say, the gang in Germany.
Michael is part of the gang in Germany, though.
I know. How's Germany?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, if it's in the same language, then we don't have the problem.
Well, there's still the metadata issue.
The two modules could be in the same language and still be incompatible with each other.
But again, from the OOR infrastructure perspective, if we're going to support this notion of composition, and just for the moment we'll restrict ourselves to staying in the same language, does the OMV have sufficient number of attributes to allow that?
Well, the OMV has use imports, for example.
But what if OWL, for instance, I have a bunch of rules, and they cut across multiple ontologies. So this thing, this theory of a particular domain that I want to put into the OOR requires that I keep track of the fact that I'm using these different ontologies, their versions, and in addition to this rule set, or set of rules, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that might be a simple notion of a composition, a composite, shall we say. So it's a composition. It exists, not a 2B thing. Any thoughts on that, Ken?
Well, see, so for example, the official definition of used imports within OMV says, references another ontology metadata instance that describes an ontology containing definitions whose meaning is considered to be part of the meaning of the ontology described by this instance. So in other words, you're using another ontology in the context of, using one ontology in the context of another ontology.
Right. Okay, so that's, what you just read is the definition of that attribute?
Yeah. That's a relation between ontologies. Yeah.
Right. Well, that would seem to meet the need then, that, you know, that assertion that you have to have this thing, otherwise it ain't going to work, is what we need to address, as far as I can think of it right now.
Right. Right. But see, to me, it's kind of not clear, like, what would happen if, you know, we really are dealing with a full OOR where we have all kinds of ontologies in all different languages.
Well, that attribute...
Right, it's not clear what OMV does either, but...
Are they assuming a single language?
That's the interesting part, right? I mean, because OMV does allow, multiple languages, right? Because that is part of the metadata to be able to specify what ontology language you're using.
But not with regard to the imports.
Right. No, so, like, you know, there's an attribute for ontology, has language between an ontology and an ontology language. But the use imports, you know, there's no constraint between use imports and the ontology language.
Ah. Well, maybe we need to augment it in that case.
Hmm.
So if the OMV already has that intent in mind, we could just augment it by saying what language the imports are in. And have we? I don't think we've addressed how we're going to deal with rule sets, have we? Theories.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, because we have, we were kind of assuming that your ontologies could be, you know, using RIF or common logic, and in that case, you have full theories.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not that familiar with common logic. So the axioms would be just part of the ontology or the file or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. In OWL, they don't like to do that.
No, but in say, with RIF, the rules interchange format, you can swirl, et cetera.
Okay. So that's just be part of the constraint of checking something into the OOR if you want to include rules. It has to be in that format.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to, actually, I'm a little surprised at your...
ignorance?
Well, no. You're,
oh, don't be surprised about that.
The direction you're coming from. You know, no, because I kind of always assume, and maybe this is, like, naive on my part, that we're simply talking about axioms in an ontology and rule, you know, saying you're using rules is just using a different language for the axioms. Am I under a misconception there, or...?
I'm trying to use some term that's going to be common in terms of our discussion here. I understand that I prefer the first order notion of an axiom as just this formal assertion using terms and relations and whatever.
Right.
In some particular language. And then the interpretation
right.
is referring to a particular ontology. It has its own interpretation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So were you thinking of rules as being something different?
Say again?
Were you thinking of rules as being something different?
Oh, no. But that's...
I
can tell you a story where I had an interesting interchange with a well-known person about rules one time. He thought I was really out to lunch because I didn't understand when they were talking about rules, they were really talking about axioms. Axioms I understand perfectly well. It's this other nonsense from the... Let's see, who's on the call? Who can I upset? Oh, no, I won't say that. Never mind. Yeah. But, you know... The thing is, OOR has not been focusing on theories, per se, except to the extent that a simple ontology with some, you know, classes or concepts, whatever, and relations constitute a theory, i.e., without songs, axioms.
Right.
Yeah. So in terms of gatekeeping, if we're going to say that these things have to be a combined entity, then we're going to have some enforcement. Now, if the language like common logic, it's not an issue, that's easy for enforcement, but if it's OWL or RDF or something else, something people haven't thought of yet, that would require a different set of gatekeeping functionality for that language.
Well, no, but OWL has OWL imports as well, right?
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the rules. You know, essentially, if you want to stick in rules also, you have to use the rule exchange format, as you suggested. That's all.
Mm. But,
But again, if that's just a language dependency, since we're assuming the languages are separate independent modules in OOR, they just have to interact with gatekeeping in the appropriate fashion.
Oh, okay, so you're implicitly kind of talking about segregating the repository into different language bins.
Well, you know, in terms of operation, you're going to see a uniform interface, and if you're going to deal with different languages, then different modules that support that language would come into play.
Right.
I think we've always had the notion of that there has to be a language-dependent module for each of the languages that OOR would support.
Okay, sorry, module. You're using module in a software sense right now, right?
I'm sorry, yes. We're talking about infrastructure now of OOR.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that plug-in, or whatever you want to call it, add-on, or I forget what terms you're using now, it's a chunk of software that has certain responsibilities, and it embeds the knowledge of the language that's needed to meet the responsibilities for the OOR. The responsibilities for each language are about the same. Of course, some languages, like Common Logic, we could expect a lot more from.
Okay, so then you don't think it was it's kind of a part of a use case for OOR to the ability to do the combination of ontologies in different languages?
I'll defer to Ken on that one. He's more familiar with all the use cases.
Because in a way, if you kind of break it down that way, then like, what's the point of having if you're going to segregate ontologies into different language bins, then what's the point of having Calore work along with the rest of OOR?
Well, no. Calore may be another module that would allow crossing those language barriers. So hold on. One thing is the content that the OOR is going to manage, and then there's
right.
how OOR itself is going to behave. So from a software
right.
perspective, you don't want to have a single thingy that's responsible for all possible languages built as a monolithic big blob of stuff. So I'm not saying that there cannot be some other module that facilitate the cross-language interaction. We don't want to preclude that either.
Right. No, definitely not. I was kind of thinking that that's one necessary feature we need to have.
Yes, at some point, yeah. Right now we have to get more going than we currently have. So this ability to deal with ontologies and different languages in a more sophisticated fashion will definitely be a needed feature.
Ken,
what are your thoughts on this? Oh, go ahead, Peter.
If I may make one point. I think Michael is speaking with some visibility into a tool that could sort of bridge between or translate between different languages, I mean, which is sort of essentially what this Onto-IOP standardization effort is, and obviously based on previous presentations of that tool done by Till Mosakowski and the German contingent before. And I think Todd is speaking from the perspective of with the assumption that, I mean, you can sort of bridge that for the time being. Am I correct? And hence, or maybe you're both sort of looking at the situation slightly differently.
Well, I mean, my discussion, was maybe perhaps, kind of motivated by some of the questions that are arising in that other project, but it seemed to me that, when we talk about, I mean, I don't want to kind of raise the open issue again, but, that open part of open ontology repository, to me, really seemed to be this idea that there are going to be, want the repository to be kind of language independent, language agnostic. But then, if you kind of really go beyond that to say, well, look, it's not like we don't, we're not language agnostic in the sense of I don't care what language you have, you're welcome in the repository. But I mean, if there's no interaction between ontologies, then we have just, just a big library, right? So to me, the power of the repository comes from functionality that exploits relationships between ontologies. Otherwise, it's just a big library of ontologies, and there are lots of libraries of those around on the web, so we're not adding anything more. But then as soon as you start talking about relationships between ontologies, the big benefit's going to be coming about when you can actually really combine arbitrary ontologies, no matter where they're coming from and no matter how they're expressed.
I agree, Michael, but first we have to have that. First of all, I would argue against this, or argue that there aren't really good libraries out there unless you're talking about bioportals. And so having the library that can provide access to some useful and good ontology in the first place is a start. But it's only a start.
Well, actually, I ran across it's a library. It's not a repository. So to me, BioPortal has this additional software functionality that makes it a repository. But there was this, where was it now? It's at Manchester. There was an ontology library.
Is it?
Yes,
they probably have one, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, continue.
Okay, but having a, when I think of a library, just think of a regular brick and mortar library. There's lots of stuff in there besides just books, right? They do have some relations among those books and some way to find those books easily in a useful fashion.
Right.
Now, of course, if you could take those books and sort of merge their contents, that would be even better, which is what you're suggesting, and it will need to be done. So I'm not saying we shouldn't do what you want to do, but we're not there yet. However, I think we need to know what we need to do so we don't build things into a corner.
Okay, so but what I'm trying to get at is what are the relationships between ontologies that we need to focus on? Right, because, okay, so I found it. It's called TONES, T-O-N-E-S. If you just Google TONES Ontology Repository Manchester, you can find it. There are 218 ontologies listed there, but it's just a giant list. So that's what I mean by a library, because it's just a giant list and there are no relationships at all between the ontologies.
Yeah.
And to me, one of the things that makes something a repository, in addition to the software functionality that we've talked about in other use cases, but it's also these relationships between these ontologies. How are they related to each other? Are some composed of others? Do some extend others? How do they extend them? Things like that.
Oh, yeah. Right, and hopefully the OOR would be able to show some of those relationships, at least initially for same language, independent of whichever language it is. And then the next step, after you've represented these relationships among the ontologies in a single language, be able to support cross-language capabilities.
Well, okay, so then do we... I didn't see you put it in the chat there. Sorry. So do we just simply then fall back on a particular language? So just use, the imports from OMV, but then with this additional restriction that it's the same language. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, no, from a functional perspective, yes, initially we'd have to enforce the fact that it has to be from the same language, or just put up an error message saying, oops, well, sorry, you're going across languages, we don't have that capability just yet, call back. But I think in terms of the metadata, we'd want to be able to support from the start, since we have to extend it anyway, it seems, what language these other imports are in.
Well, no, but that's already part of OMV, to know what the language is.
No, the language of the
import. That's already a relation.
In OMV? So if I have an ontology in Common Logic and I want to suck in some simple ontologies from OWL, the OMV metadata would require me to specify the languages these other ontologies I'm going to import in are in?
Well, no, see, okay, so maybe this is all, I mangled this a little bit. OMV has a relation called use imports.
Correct.
Second, OMD has a relation called has language. It's a relation between an ontology and an ontology language. Full stop. Okay. Now then, the thing is that there's nothing in OMV that makes a restriction about the relationship between the used imports and the has language.
Okay, so that you could specify the language of the ontology, and then also be able to specify the language of any imports.
Yeah, you could theoretically do that, because you could just simply say the ontology language of the ontology being imported has to equal the ontology language of the ontologist doing the importing.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is Terry Longstreth. When you say imports, Michael, are you talking about something that's already contained within the OOR, or is imports essentially an external, reaching outside of the OOR? The object you're talking about?
That's a good question as well. You were kind of relating what OMV contains as a relation.
Right.
But that's a good point.
That would be depending on the policy that the OOR is enforcing. So that if someone comes up to OOR and says, I would like to provide this ontology to the OOR, i.e. register it, then do we require that all the imports are all then also, registered with the OOR?
I think you're going to need two different functions. One is essentially a unifying function within the OOR, and the other is something that's an external reference.
Well, certainly the reference to the import is external to the ontology itself, but should all of those ontologies that are going to be imported be required to be registered with the OOR also, or an OOR somewhere?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's sort of a policy thing, and I believe the workflow engine can support different policies. So, of course, from an operational perspective, if I go there and I want to get an ontology, and, I find, oops, I have to import six or seven ontologies, is fine, but there's just one of them that's somewhere, and I can't find the bloody thing, that makes it less than effective from a user perspective. On the other hand,
I agree.
If that one other ontology is sort of copyrighted and you have to pay royalties to use it, then if I'm the person that owns that that revenue stream mechanism, I may want to use the OOR essentially to advertise my stuff to force you to use it. So I'll defer some of those questions or notions to you, Peter. I would suggest that they all have to be registered.
We do have stipulation that anything that goes into OOR needs to supply a minimal set of metadata. I mean, that's part of sort of the tenets that we are working with.
Right.
But
then what we're asking is something more about policy of operation. If your ontology requires imports, are you required to then also register all of those imported? All of those ontologies that need to be imported from the workflow engine, as I understand it, that's a configurable item in terms of policy of how registration takes place in the context of the existence of imports. Right, Ken?
Yes, that's right. It's configurable.
Right. I guess this is not for me to call, but for this meeting to find out.
Let's flip a coin.
Or to come to consensus on.
Yeah.
No, not for any one particular person to make a call.
But I think it makes sense. I think Todd's position makes sense to say that we kind of require all the components of an ontology in the repository to also be in the repository.
Yeah, we did at one point saying that the sort of minimal unit that's addressable is a module, right? I mean, that's from Michael.
Yeah.
So then we come down to what is required of a module. I mean, do we register all modules with the same policy and stipulations?
Well, as Ken said, that's configurable. So we just have to decide what we want that configuration to be.
Well, it's a policy. And so, you know, the policies are configured.
Well, I think, definitely what Peter said, I think makes sense, that we want that to be related there to the, that if we have this notion of imports, then eventually there has to be a set of ontologies that do not do any importing, but are rather imported by others. And that
right.
would be the building blocks. And all those need to be definitely registered in the repository.
Maybe either Michael or Todd, you might want to capture this into the notes of the meeting.
Okay, yeah, I'll start typing.
Oh, good, thank you. Somebody's
yeah.
got a squeaky door at the other end there.
Okay. Ali had sort of put a whole bunch of things onto the chat board. You want to talk about it?
So, Ali, we can't hear you.
I just thought I just summarized what was being cut.
Great, but Ali, you'd also have to declare that this ontology in common law that's not in OOR is not in OOR, right?
ORR. That's somewhere else. Or is that a typo? O3.
That's my answer.
Okay. Right. Yeah, this is actually an ORR. The MMI people, the Marine Metadata people, call theirs the ORR, Ontology Repository and Registry. They are supposedly a sort of collaborator of the OOR project as well. So.
So what are we capturing here, Peter? It just slipped my brain. Are you typing now, Michael?
Michael
yeah.
is typing it out. We'll find out.
Aha.
There we go.
That's funny. Everything's kind of being duplicated here.
That's okay. Redundancy is not always bad.
Can you say that again?
It happens over and over again.
How much
well, what was it, Terry?
It was a bad joke.
Yeah. Got to be quick. So did we agree to a policy as to how OR will enforce imports or the existence of imports? That is, in Ali's example, that this ontology or these ontologies would not be allowed in because one of them, the O2, is not in the OOR. Right. That's okay, yeah. And also, Ali, in the declare statement, you have to declare where these ontologies are, right?
Well, no, aren't they? Oh, I see what you mean, because one's in OOR, one's not. Well, no, I don't know. Like, you don't want to have the user specify those because we may be, you know, pulling these ontologies from, you know, very arbitrary places independently of OOR. I think it's up to OOR to know whether or not a particular ontology is contained and registered or not.
Well, no, that should be part of the registration process. So if I'm going to, which one is it now? O3 has import, O3 has. So if it's O3 that you're going to register with OOR, and it has these other imports, one of which is not an OOR, as part of the registration, I would expect that you'd have to specify that. Or if the other ontologies are already in OOR, you'd want to essentially find them and put that reference into your metadata when you register O3. Or maybe the OOR could automatically look up, once it does the parsing of the import statements in the ontology, automatically go out and search to see if it has those available to facilitate the registration process. But somehow the entity or person registering the ontology is going to have to do something to specify some of these things.
I don't think that's putting too much burden on the user. I think the user should just be somebody who's, either building ontology or submitting an ontology. And I think it's up to the OOR to be able to do that kind of analysis.
Well, certainly, I mean, you could look at import, parse the import statements and determine whether that referenced ontology is in an OOR somewhere if they're federated or if it's not.
Exactly. Right.
But if it's not,
right. We need to be able to do that.
But if it's not in an OOR, the user, the person who is registering the ontology, O3 in this case, would have to specify where is the bloody thing, unless it's already in part of the namespace, URL, URI, in the ontology itself.
Well, I mean, definitely, every language definitely needs to have that capability, I mean, of namespacing and having a URI for the ontology. But I think it's fair to kind of warn the user to say, are importing ontology that's not part of the OR, you know, you need to register that one first, or you need to have it somehow registered first. I think that's reasonable. But to require the user, to kind of manually identify within the syntax of some language that it's something that's outside the OR, I don't think that's...
Not in the syntax of the language, Michael, but as part of the metadata.
Yeah, that's still the syntax of the metadata then.
Yeah, well, you know, you can have some simple UI, just type in some ASCII characters or something. Yeah, I realize it's putting some burden on the person registering an ontology. You want to minimize those onerous details, but until we have a good mechanism to do some of this stuff automatically, we have to have something in there. Any thoughts, Ken? This would certainly be part of the workflow of registration or one of the registrar's responsibilities to go and check the import statements.
Yeah, certainly the workflow can handle this kind of issue. The problem with trying to give a kind of a single policy is that different communities might have different ideas about how they want to, enforce these policies.
But I thought one partition of, what was it, users, had the notion of different communities having their own separate policies. Is that correct, or did I misinterpret
it? That's right. Each one will have its own policy, so you don't want to have an overarching policy that says, you know, every ontology must do this. You know, you just want to specify the minimum necessary for the functioning of the repository.
Okay.
So is it really absolutely necessary that an imported ontology be registered?
Well, it would make it easier when someone goes out to get them and use them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense because if you import an ontology and then you want to validate the ontology and you want to check it. If you don't have access to the imported ontology, there's no way you can do that.
Are those chickens I hear in the background somewhere?
Yes, there are. That's me. Sorry. I'll mute.
So it would actually make sense that every imported ontology must be registered in the sense that you have to know where to get it.
Yeah.
But you're saying that you would still allow that to be something that was external.
So there's the notion of registration, and then there's also the notion of storage. An ontology can be registered without being physically stored at this instance. And that's the whole idea.
No, I'm not talking about physically stored. I'm talking about kind of being an entity within the repository.
Yeah, to import it, it would seem like you'd have to do that. Otherwise, how could you do anything with the ontology that's doing the import?
No, but that's what we were saying was kind of the policy here, that the any ontology that's imported by an ontology within the repository must itself be registered within the repository.
Yeah, well, if it isn't registered, then when you try to validate the ontology that you that's importing it, then how could it do it? But again, of course, it might depend on which stage of the workflow you're at. For instance, you could specify in an early stage of the workflow that you have a certain ontology and that you plan to import another ontology, but you haven't actually worked out what that other one is going to be, but you know its name. I mean, there could be workflows like that.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's conceivable that you could have an import of an ontology that has yet to be registered. If you're at an early stage of the development process.
But from a user's perspective, that's going to be problematic, right? So you go looking for something in the OOR. Oh, here's one. Looks like it's going to do my job. You go to get it. Oops, it's not complete. I can't use it. It's worthless from an operational perspective.
Oh, no, but you wouldn't be advertising it. It wouldn't be available outside of the development process.
Oh, okay. I guess I forgot about those other attributes.
What other attributes?
Well, what you suggested sounds like when you go to register an ontology, you could say it's ready for prime time or no, it's still in development and don't let anyone look at it or something like along those lines.
I mean, you could advertise it in the sense that, okay, here's an ontology that will exist someday, so, you know, you're sort of giving a heads up that this is being developed, but, you know, that, you know, it's not yet available. I mean, that's a possible stage in development.
Isn't that what SourceForge is for? I haven't heard we wanted to support that sort of capability. It sounds like a good one.
I mean, it's, the point is that advertising it and having availability are two different things.
like vaporware?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, people do that.
Well, I would be concerned. I wouldn't mind having such an attribute as long as if someone did a search, that attribute is not on by default, i.e. anything that has that attribute as, you know, in development wouldn't show up. You'd have to modify your search to look for those things also.
Yeah, that would make sense, of course.
Right. You don't want to give someone false hope.
But
sorry, I have to drop off.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, maybe we can wrap up the meeting then if we're starting to lose people. Are there any other points that people want to bring up here? I think it's interesting. So we kind of focused mainly on the notion of imports. So, again, we could probably use the OMV imports relation for this. But what the discussion has kind of followed up on has been more how that would be related to the different workflow within OR. So, okay, so that's kind of a summary, I guess, of where we are going. Are there any other points that people want to raise before too many other people leave? Peter, how long had we scheduled the meeting for? Was it an hour meeting? Was this a one-hour meeting?
One and a half hours.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so let's see. Okay,
the issue of how dynamic an imported module might be is probably part of the discussion we've just had, but mm-hmm. I think it's a black hole that we have to consider. The idea that it isn't just a matter of versioning to change a certain set of concepts.
In what way is it not just versioning? If you could elaborate that point a bit.
Well, I think of versioning as a label on a set of text, but in fact, over time, if people use ontologies, they'll discover that the ontology means something other than what was explicitly said, and so there's an issue of the evolving semantics of the ontologies themselves.
And how is this evolution being reflected?
I don't know, but I don't think versioning is adequate to cover it. It might be, but for example, if I extend an ontology by adding a new module that collects newer information, then conceivably I've changed the version of the embedding module, or importing module.
Right.
But that doesn't capture the idea that the concepts that are in that embedding module have changed their flavor as well. Perhaps I'm not being very articulate here. The idea that a module reflects an invariant semantic, I think, is wrong, and I don't know how to address the idea that module's meanings can change over time without explicitly relabeling it as a new version.
Maybe you could just come up with an example. Like you don't have to do it like right now, but maybe, you know, over the next.
I probably owe you a dozen. I'll try to come up with something on that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't mean like a full-blown use case, just an example of, you know, two ontologies, one importing the other one, and how that change, you know, what you consider to be the thing that changes, and then so we can actually, say, look at a particular pair of ontologies, I guess. At least it has to be a minimum of a pair here, I guess. So that's all we would need in the example. It doesn't have to be a full-blown use case.
Yeah, okay. It's,
yeah, I guess I know where Terry comes from. Let's say when you say you're importing, I mean, you sort of represent it with an IRI. The IRI actually does not represent the semantics of what's contained within that IRI, which, let's say, the original author is liable to change.
Right.
So, I mean, even if it's registered, I mean, there are issues because the semantics, I mean, keeps changing.
Okay, so I guess that's something to capture there then, yeah.
And also...
Is that what you meant?
Yeah, you're getting the idea, right. That's what I meant, and also it means that the idea of imports has to be much more elaborate. You know, imports probably has to include something that tracks the validation activities, so that you know that you imported it last week and it was fine, but you imported it this week and it wasn't anymore. Or you know, is imports something that occurs dynamically when the importing module is referenced, or is this
part of maybe a larger issue in the sense of how is the OOR updated?
Yeah.
Right, because the same thing could happen, right?
Exactly.
I think it's a much larger issue.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff we're talking about is something you learn in your first week of compiler theory in college. But we're not talking about the syntax of these languages, you know, and having the compiler throw out an error because you used a load address instead of a load. This is a little more. We're still talking about the meaning and the meanings of concepts and how those concepts interact with each other, I think.
Well, no, to me, it actually presumes we've solved the issue of updating the repository. Because if you're just kind of referring to an ontology that's already within the repository, then we control all the change mechanism, the versioning, et cetera.
Well, we don't control the change that people use it for. We don't control the things that people use it for, and we're not tracking usage, are we?
No. Well, what I'm saying is that if there's an ontology that's in the repository, then I guess in Peter's example, is that an actual set of axioms, right? So something that's fixed, or is it an external IRI, which can change without it kind of explicitly becoming known to the repository?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yes. But I think it can also change internally, change in the repository without our awareness.
Okay, so that's why I was kind of saying this maybe it requires us to address the update issue, because to me that should never happen.
It happens in language all the time, and we're really trying to model, I mean, natural language, human language.
No, but the point is that in the repository.
You've got an ontology that describes tanks, you know, and ultimately you go back and discover that tank was a British secret project in World War I.
Right. No, but what I'm saying is, since we are specifying the protocols for the repository, to me it seems to make sense that updates should be explicitly captured by the repository.
Okay. So
that's kind of one of the points.
And if somebody uses an ontology that's in the repository, and finds it useful in a realm that's marginally different from the one it was originally intended for, that's going to change the meaning of that ontology.
No, like the same thing. BioPortal. How does BioPortal deal with this?
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Well, no. I mean,
I don't know if it does.
Yeah.
Seriously, how does BioPortal suddenly discover that cancer's not caused by a virus in all cases?
Well, I guess that's an issue here. So how does...
Yeah, let's Michael could just capture that into the notes, and we'll revisit that time later.
Well, no, I think this is in the scope of today's meeting, because I'd say three of the four relations within OMV are related to versioning.
It's within scope, but we probably can't resolve it today.
Right.
Policy that when we import, we will have to import whatever it is that fully entails the semantics and not a sort of not just a pointer to the semantics.
Right. I mean, I think that's kind of the issue here. And I kind of think that our repository is not a bunch of pointers. Our repository actually is a specific set of axioms.
So imports involves a unifying notion.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe this could be a discussion for a later meeting here. Ken, how did you kind of envision this scenario?
What exactly is the scenario? I mean, I didn't follow it all.
So the idea is that in the repository, suppose, I guess the simplest thing is just updating the version. So I have an ontology in the repository. Okay, so I submitted it, and so it's in the repository. But then, later on, Terry actually goes and makes some edits to the ontology, but not part of the repository. Say it was, part of our company. Terry and I are working together. I check the ontology in, but then he goes and changes it. Now, how does OOR kind of handle that? How does OOR kind of reflect the idea that perhaps the ontology I submitted is not the most up-to-date version?
Well, it has a versioning capability, so you update it and you get a new version.
Well, no, the point is...
The case you just mentioned...
I'm not really following what the issue is here.
Right. Terry probably couldn't just go in and edit your ontology. I mean, if he had edited it somewhere else, because the OR is not an editing platform, he'll have to upload a new revision.
So my ontology imports Terry's ontology.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And it's importing it with a URI. But then, If Terry's ontology is not part of the repository, he goes and changes it, then how is that change reflected, right? So our ontologies in OR simply pointers to ontologies somewhere else, and as those ontologies are changing, that's being reflected within the OOR, or our ontologies within OOR specific sets of axioms that are kind of uploaded from somewhere else, and if you make an update to one of those ontologies, have a new version, then you have to explicitly check it in.
Yeah, I know that in software there's the technique they have for this is to have a kind of checksum, so that if you try to
Terry's point is that if the ontology I'm writing use imports. His ontology, but his ontology changes. How am I kind of, effectively by changing his ontology, he's changed my ontology.
Yeah, and that's only if the resolution is dynamic. If it's not dynamic, then your ontology just goes out of date.
But no, I'm saying this actually is the same in software, where you import some other class and then, somebody else, changes that class, suddenly your program has changed.
Right.
But you see, you can specify a serial UUID, something like that. You can specify essentially a checksum, and then you could import and, in effect say, okay, I'm importing this, and it has to have this checksum. And if somebody else changes it, then suddenly it says, well, no, you can't import that. It's the wrong checksum. So you kind of force the import to be a specific version.
Okay, so that's some functionality we want to have in OOR?
I don't think you can continually monitor these external resources.
The point is it doesn't exist. I don't know, do we have a notion of a checksum for an ontology? It would be an interesting concept to have.
Well, I think Terry's arguing that it's necessary, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
So what's
our preference? I mean, do we want to keep it dynamic or do we want to allow it to become obsolete? I guess we probably want that decision first.
Well, no, the point is that an import can be an import of a version, or it can be an import of just the ontology, and you allow it to change. So it's two different kinds of import.
Okay. Sure. This is great. Please capture into the notes.
You know, I suspect maybe the BioPortal doesn't address this because BioPortal also does not have any relationships between ontologies.
They have mappings.
They have mappings, but that, I think they're rarely used. I'm not sure if they deal with this kind of dynamic nature.
But I think the mapping is fairly simple.
Right.
Like a same as relationship, or there's very few relationships in their mappings that they're supporting.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not sure how they deal with this aspect of versioning. It's not the versioning of a particular ontology by itself. It's the problems that arise from importing an ontology that may have different versions.
Yeah, dependencies.
Yeah. Actually, it'd be interesting to even look at BioPortal to see if they even have any imports relations between ontologies within BioPortal.
Sorry, I put that in the chat.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, I think we cover quite a bit of territory today.
So that'll be that's one little thing to check to see what BioPortal does, actually.
Well, BioPortal does have a notion of ontology and an ontology version.
Right, but what do they actually do when they're doing the importing?
Right, that would be interesting to see. Do you import the ontology or do you import the ontology version?
Exactly.
Do you import the ontology or do you just resolve the cross-references without actually taking ownership of the subordinate part?
Right.
Well, that's, I don't know, does that really count as
importing? Say again?
But you can always have URIs in an ontology, which could in principle be anywhere, right?
Well, that's the point, really. Yeah, so they can change arbitrarily, or their implications can change arbitrarily.
But you're not actually importing any axioms. You're just saying you have a URI. It's just a.
Now you're talking BioPortal does that.
I'm just talking about what Owl does.
Owl does that.
Owl effectively it doesn't just import that URI. When it in that URI, it's importing whatever is at that URI.
Right.
It really is an import.
Import is quite different from just specifying a URI, which happens not to be in the same file.
No, but if you have owl imports, if you say owl imports and you put a URI there, it's effectively, semantically, it's including all the axioms that are found at that URI.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a very strong notion.
Found at the URI at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when the items at that URI change, does the BioPortal know it?
Of course not.
No.
I think XML actually has two notions of an import. I think import and include.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them is kind of textual. It's as if you just took the file and copied it into the other file.
Right. Which is basically what CL imports does.
Is that what CL does?
Okay. Yeah.
But then what that means is that you then resolve any URIs in the context, and it's now in a different context. So that's different from an import where you resolve within the original source. So it's all a question of how you resolve URIs. I mean, in principle, if the URIs are fully specified, then there wouldn't be any difference, I guess.
Okay. I think we're probably running out of time here then. Any other last points to bring up? Okay. Well, it seems to me like the notion of versioning is still very much an open issue for us in OOR. So perhaps the next kind of workshop we have on this topic might focus on versioning more explicitly.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. I guess we'll wrap up there.
Are there different
points.
Notions of versioning written up somewhere? Do you have a...
ontology versioning? Yeah, not too many.
I mean, Is there some paper or report that does versioning?
I don't know. We'll have to take a look at maybe W3C, see if they have any best practice documents on ontology versioning. My suspicion is there aren't any.
So it's just like really vague?
Yeah. Well, okay, I guess that'll be maybe action item for everybody. Maybe.
As nearly as I can tell, most of what people discuss in versioning is just a numbering system rather than any kind of semantics.
Yeah. Well, maybe what we can just do is maybe just do a little bit of a literature search. You know, everyone can, find these, and maybe we can put up a page for like a future meeting and start putting the either the pointers to the pages or the actual PDF, which is sort of the issue that we're describing now. If I put a pointer to a paper and somebody changes the paper, it's the same paper. Whereas if I put the PDF up on the page, then it's that fixed version of the paper.
Right.
Man, sorry, my typing is terrible today. It should be action item.
No, that's good. I wouldn't worry about the spelling here.
All right. So there's our action item and a plan for the next workshop.
Right. You want to do 2Y, 2Y?
I'm sorry?
You want to go back to the meeting page and do the 2Y, 2Y. I guess especially because you make reference to translating between languages. I guess it's important that this group comes join you on this Thursday's session.
Oh, you mean under announcements here?
Right.
Okay, sorry. I was thinking of our next OR meeting, not the next event of Ontolog.
But this is a joint IAOA OR Ontolog event. So
you want me to put that? I'm sorry. But it's already announced here.
Right, right. Just let everyone know that. Please join us this Thursday, if you haven't RSVP yet, please do so. We'll look forward to your joining us. And Michael, okay. I would need fairly soon a title, the proper title for Elisa Kendall's session and an abstract.
Okay, I'll ping her on that.
Are you just having Elisa? At one point, you did. Talked about Evan Wallace.
Yeah, Evan said he's kind of moved on, so it'll just be Elisa.
Okay. And I know there are many parts to 19763. Are you just doing part 3, part 6, the whole thing?
Well, that's the reason why there's no title or abstract.
Okay.
That issue has not been resolved.
All right. Okay, and yeah. I also want to make an announcement is that this voice conferencing bridge that we have been using so well for the last few years, they are going out of business as in a couple of weeks, as at the end of this month. So within the next couple of weeks, we would be trying out a few alternatives. And so, just be aware I might announce and want to help ask people to help test some new platforms. Michael, since you're in Germany, I mean, when we test, we probably want to have people sort of calling in from various places.
Okay,
there's one platform that I'm going to test out fairly soon. I think that would be it. I mean, it's not very expensive, and it actually supports people dialing in through Skype for a free call, which is something people have always been asking for. And so we might get to something even better yet.
Oh,
so I just wanted to let people be aware of this. Originally, I was hoping we could use this session as a test, but then I wasn't able to put everything together in time. So possibly this Thursday session, if we run some preliminary test today or tomorrow, soon enough.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good.
Right.
Hey, this is Terry. You keep talking about Thursday session. I've been looking around. I can't find an announcement. So is it on today's page somewhere?
It's on today's page somewhere. It's on the home page of the Ontolog Wiki. It was on a recent Ontolog invitation, which is our announcement list. Are you on that list? You should be.
I don't think so.
If you're not, then you should be. If you look at today's session page, either 2Y, 2Y, under 2Y,
2Z.
2Z, yeah.
The 2Y, 2Y is the announcements, and then 2Y, 2Z is right after that, and that's the
session. Right.
I see it. Thank you.
But that same piece is on the front page of the Ontolog Wiki on the front page of the Ontolog wiki, there's a thing called news and announcement. When in doubt, that is the go-to place.
Okay, yeah. I had seen this before and thought I did definitely wanted to be involved, but I didn't get it onto my calendar yet. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, question. How can I get on the mailing list? Sorry, I come from FDA.
Who is that again?
This is Xin Fang Li. I come from FDA. So someone forward this email to me. So I just joined the meeting. This is a wonderful conference call. But I want to get in on the meeting list. Where should I, you know, do the registration on the meeting list invitation?
Okay. You're obviously not on our chat board.
No.
Okay. Are you looking at our meeting page now? The one that
right now
I'm
on the meeting page. It's a Tuesday, 18 October 2011. So
get 2XWL. If you go to purple number 2XWL, find on page 2XWL.
2XWL. Okay.
Okay, I'm Peter Yim. That's my email address. If you drop me a note, I'll help you get set up.
2XWL at
yes.
Email?
No. 2XWL on that page. It says RSVP to peter.yim@cim3.com. I was just trying to get you my email address.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, I will try send you an email.
Right. Just send me an email. I will sort of go into a slightly more detailed discussion because, I mean, we are running quite a few different communities. The call you're at today is called OOR. This is OOR team, the Open Ontology Repository. But if you're interested in ontologies in general, then there's a bigger list, and then there's an announcement list, and so on. So let's take this offline. I'll get you set up.
Okay, great. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Oh, appreciate it.
Bye.
Okay, Peter, I have to sign off now.
All right,
yep.
I guess.
Okay. Yeah, we're all wrapped up then.
Yep.
Talk to everyone later.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Your name is?
The moderator has disconnected.